Good morning. This morning is Monday, January 9th, 9:27 a.m. I'm calling to order a special meeting of the Chelan Public Utility District Board of Commissioners. Purpose of this meeting today is to do a facilities tour. We will immediately recess to travel to Rock Island Dam for a tour of facilities, then back to headquarters approximately at noon. Afternoon, we will go to our Holly Street facility, and then later this afternoon to Central Maintenance at Rocky Reach Dam. At this time, we will recess and reconvene as soon as we're all assembled at Rock Island Dam. Good afternoon. It's January 9th. I'm looking at...
Yes,
January 9th. Apologize. It's 12:05 p.m. This is the Chelan PUD district reconvening our session that we started at 9:30 this morning. We've just taken a morning tour of Rock Island facilities. I might add that it was an absolutely marvelous tour that we had, and thank you to the staff, everybody that put that together. We're going into a regular meeting here to discuss facilities here at the district headquarters for the next approximately an hour. We'll recess again and take an additional tour of our Holly Street facilities and our central maintenance at Rocky Reach Dam. So we're back in session.
One of the, just real quick, Kirk Hudson, Managing Director of Generation Transmission. One of the things I mentioned to Commissioner Smith on the way that I thought would be pertinent to the other commissioners was that one of the things we didn't see when we were down at Rock Island was all the equipment that we have stored inside the powerhouse. We have a lot of spare parts and equipment and crates that are inside the powerhouse. And as we approach B1 through 4 modernization, we're going to need to move as much of that out of the powerhouse as we can, because we'll be disassembling 3 units at the same time. And so just wanted to point that out, that it's one of the needs that we have identified as a storage facility up in the upper level on the Powerhouse 2 site, so we can get those things out of the powerhouse. But just thought it was pertinent. Something we didn't see. Same thing at Rocky Reach. We've got a lot of equipment that we're actually storing on the generator floor.
And I might add, for those that listen to the recording, that we're in the process of having a working lunch, so you may be hearing people chewing while they're talking sometime. I'm not sure, but we'll try to avoid that as much as possible on the recording. And I'd like to ask Jeff, who's going to take the lead for this segment?
So, commissioners, by the way, thank you very much for taking the time today to tour facilities. Again, as we mentioned when we kicked this off this morning, this is intended to give you perspective. And actually, this is really a great opportunity to have visited Rock Island, take a pause and listen to Randy Cook. We talked about TCF architecture, and Randy has very patiently worked us through this process of developing a strategic facilities plan and the reasons for it. So he's going to insert now about a 15 to 20 minute presentation. 15 or 20 minutes, Randy.
Okay, I heard you.
Mr. Stoll has another 15 or 20 to tack on to it, which is directly relevant to that. But he's going to provide the perspective of where we've come from and why we're doing this. And then John has, I mentioned before, a presentation on a couple of site visits that he's made that kind of show you what other utility companies are doing that are in the same boat, or at least similar boat. So Randy, take her away.
Okay. Well, I understand you all toured Rock Island this morning, and right after lunch will be Holly Street and these facilities, and then out to Rocky Reach. as usual, I planned for 30, but then I cut it to 15. So we'll move through these pretty quickly. We won't spend any time this morning really talking about a lot of the work we did on programming and alternatives. There's just voluminous data that we have put together with our team over the last year, and certainly Sam and Dan and Kirk and others in the room are well aware of all of that. There's been a number of presentations in this room showing all these alternatives. This afternoon, we'll focus just really on the state of facilities. And you've seen some this morning. You'll certainly see more this afternoon. So I'm just going to go through each of the sites. We'll start with downtown, and we'll move to the other facilities. You'll see an aerial photograph of each of these. This will give you the bird's eye view and just help orient you. Certainly, you're well aware of the facilities down here on this campus. numerous buildings that are stretched from the north on Fifth Avenue all the way to the south, ranging in age from the 20s up through the 50s and 70s and 80s. I think the last thing that was really done here was back in the 90s. You have buildings that are extremely aged here. Something I really want to have you think about is it's one thing to rehabilitate old facilities. We do it all the time. And then it's something else to really consider the strategic plan. That's why this has been called a strategic plan process, because what we're trying to do is help you make good decisions about where you build, how you build, what you build, not just fixing things. Because if you just put money into fixing things, it may or may not be the best long-term value decision. And that's really what we're trying to help you uncover over time. But the condition of the facilities is certainly to be considered. Just a few snapshots here. On the top left is the main crew yard. If you're here in the morning and you see a little bit of controlled chaos of trucks trying to get in and out, during the middle of the day, the fleet guys are trying to move larger vehicles through here. It's a very constricted space. They've learned how to deal with it. You have a very hardy workforce. And as I see with a lot of other public infrastructure clients, we see that adaptation is sort of the survival mechanism. And you have a workforce that just says, okay, if this is what I have, I'm going to make it work the best I can make it work, and I'm not going to complain, and we're going to do everything we can with it. And time goes by. Decades actually go by. And then we come and look at it, and we say, wow, that's a pretty constricted yard. I'm amazed at how you make it work. And they say, well, we work hard to make it work, right? And we work hard to make sure that it's safe. But in fact, it's always kind of on the edge. It's always kind of on the edge of not working, or certainly not being optimal. Top right, you see the brick wall of your tech shop. That's the oldest building on the campus. Literally a building. It's hard for me to imagine putting a whole lot of additional resources into this building. If it was all you had and you had to, we'd find a way to make it work. It's an old Apple warehouse. It's been repurposed. It's definitely beyond its useful life. It's got some nice old beams and wood in that building. It's a building like you might see somebody renovating to become a retail shop or something, or like what they did with the Pybus Market, take an old steel building. There can be really cool buildings. Is it the right thing to do on this site? It needs to be considered in terms of, the overall complexion and operations of the campus. Down the bottom right, you see one of the real problems on this campus, which is the constriction of flow. And as you bring your customers in, they're trying to navigate where to park, how to get into the building. Certainly one of the other operational challenges on this site. A few interior shots. Top left is your fleet shop. That's just one of the places the guys have figured out how to cram their equipment in and try to make it work. And you have a lot of equipment that they maintain. They've gotten very good at how to move vehicles in and out. But in fact, they're working in some very constricted spaces. And that's just an example of that. Top right is down in the basement of the tech shop. A lot of things get stored down there. It's nice to have. I'm sure Greg loves having a big boneyard area that he can just, put stuff. But it's also kind of a place where things go to die sometimes. So that building is, again, as I mentioned, is kind of on its last leg, although it has a lot of space that you can work with. The bottom two pictures are just some of the office space, kind of indicative of how office space over time gets configured. Any one point along the way in an operation is not necessarily the end of the world. You can say, yeah, it's pretty inefficient there. But when you put them all together, any point along the way that constricts overall flow or that inhibits conversation and collaboration is a point at which you're falling back further behind in what you might call operational excellence. And so as you look at these images, and these are just snapshots, each one is a moment along the workflow that you really need to consider in terms of how your overall operations are always, you're wanting to strive towards operational excellence. Move over to Holly Street. We have a kind of a similar situation, a wide range of buildings on this little campus. This is where most of your transformers and brace arms and everything really for your system itself are stored. This is a campus that has a mix of wood buildings, metal buildings, ranging in ages over many decades. Here are just a few snapshots. You have a lot of value in equipment that is being stored in buildings of very low value. Maybe not necessarily something that's going to fall down around you, but certainly buildings that are not necessarily commensurate with the value of the things that you're storing. The yard itself at Holly Street is kind of a difficult yard to get around. It's constricted. I did notice there was some more paving done this past summer, which helped a lot. It was a lot more gravel the first time I visited it. A lot of uneven surfaces, which makes it very hard to move equipment on and off of flatbeds and just move things around. But overall, just the site, and this is true of all these sites, I would say that the facilities don't very well promote the kinds of professionalism that I know this district states as its goals. And this is just kind of the outside eye looking in and looking at the cross-section of all of your various facilities. And I get a big kick out of the picture on the bottom right. That's what the guys have to do sometimes to keep your buildings held together. They put a C-clamp up there on the roof. So you visited Rock Island this morning. When you're down there, when you're actually driving on the bridge deck or you're up in any of these sites, it's kind of hard to get a good sense of how stretched out and kind of vast Rock Island is. And I don't know if on your tour you heard some of the anecdotes or some of the realities of what the guys face every day moving back and forth across the dam. All of the warehousing or the main warehousing parts for both powerhouses are over on the Douglas side, but you have a lot of equipment and a lot of parts and things stored up on the top side on the other side of the river. This has been a real conundrum, and we've come up with some opportunities and some alternatives, but when you just look at the age of the facilities and the condition of these facilities, before you start investing in just fixing roofs and fixing HVAC systems, it's extremely important that you think about how the buildings relate to each other, how they're organized, so again, we can promote optimum operational workflow. So on the bottom left, you see Douglas County side. Again, a mix of buildings. These are going to range in age. They go back to the 80s and 90s for the most part. Most of the original buildings that built Powerhouse 1 are long gone. These are pre-engineered metal buildings. They aren't falling down anytime soon. They're actually, you know, they've got generally good bones. It's an extremely slim piece of real estate. Everything is very tight on that side of the river. Back over on the Chelan side up on top, you'll see another wide spread range of buildings. These date back to the mid-70s when Powerhouse 2 was built. Most of them, if not all of them, are contractor buildings that were left behind, and the district got the benefit of having the contractor not only use them during construction, but turn them over to you, and you've gotten your money's worth out of them, to be sure. So just a few snapshots here. Down at the base of the dam on the Chelan side, the image on the right and the top left, we're very constricted down there. We've got the steep hillside you can see to the left. Just about anything down there is going to be tight, but we've been looking at alternatives for how we might better utilize the land that you have down there. And again, some very old buildings, not necessarily sized to the things that you need, but we know we need to start getting some warehousing and some other shop type facilities over onto the Chelan side if we're going to have any hope of increasing operational efficiencies there. Bottom left is indicative of one of the old warehouse buildings that you'll see kind of scattered around on that top side of the hill. Top left is, I think, affectionately called the Stone and Webster building, the original engineers for Powerhouse 2. And the bottom left is the inside crew room. That building's got 2.5-inch wall panels. It's a building that's hard to keep cool in the summer and warm in the winter, but again, you've got a hardy workforce. The guys have been very good at making do with this building over time. I think as a utility, you certainly pour a lot of electricity through this building every year to cool and heat it. But again, it's not a building that's falling down anytime soon. The guys kind of call it home, and you know, it's a place I know they're comfortable. Up on top of the hill where they park to start their day. Top right, one of the spaces in the building that I showed you on the previous slide, where you're storing a lot of things that are needing containment, needing ventilation. Sometimes those things are fighting each other. These are not buildings that were designed for the modern era in which you are needing to store and needing to process fluids and other types of utility equipment or consumables. And so you make the best of it. And that particular space is kind of a tough one for the guys to manage. Bottom right is the shop on the Douglas side. Again, just a pre-engineered metal building, kind of low ceiling space, kind of dingy. It's a space that if we were told, hey, just remodel this building, we could make that space look very nice for you, and we could set it up for many years to come. Is it in the right place? Is it the right size? There's going to be some constrictions in there. But again, kind of indicative of the facilities that were designed in the 50s, 60s, 70s, and now you're making do kind of in the modern era here. And again, I would just point out, as you've gone through each facility and as you go through facilities today, be thinking about the workforce that you have. They are your primary capital are the people who work for you, and the facilities in which they work really, really matter. And so as you look at any one place, you might say, oh, that's not so bad, but then you start to stretch it all together, and you're going to see a complexion of district facilities that, frankly, are at or beyond, in most cases, their useful life.
Give Randy a break while he heads to the next one. We did energy modeling of all of our facilities early on in the project to see what we were spending on maintenance and see if there's something that we could do better as far as energy efficiency. When you look at those projects, we went to all those warehouses. They're all nice and warm. Those warehouses, according to energy modeling, rank in the bottom 10% of buildings like that in America. We use a standardized system. We do a really good job of running electricity into those buildings. We're not that effective and that efficient with our electrical systems. Building analysis, we have a conservation department, and they have plans for this building, and we're trying to meet to get to standard. We want to be above, I think it's a 70% score in that criteria. When we started out, we were down in the 30s. We've been doing conservation efforts to try to plug up holes, try to insulate buildings, and those sorts of things. Beyond a certain threshold, to get much more, you have to do very, very expensive projects that just simply don't pay for themselves as far as would you put new windows in if the payback on it was 30 years, that sort of thing. But that's where we're at. So today, I was very comfortable in those buildings. I was really surprised that they were that warm on this cold of a winter day. But you'll see that when you look at the power bill, you go, wow, we're really spending that much on electricity for heating and cooling. It's a big number.
We have a team of engineers who accompanied us over here over the first few months of working on the projects. I had them pour through every single building. We developed a pretty deep database of conditions for every system, electrical systems, plumbing, HVAC, envelope, everything. So we don't have time to go over all those this morning, but they were indicative and very revealing of the condition of facilities across the system. And what that let us do is once we really got in and started looking at alternatives, is you can start to look at a building and go, okay, is this a building where you do as Sam's suggesting? Do you try to pour money into it and get a 25 or 30-year payback? And then if you did, is it where you really want it? Rocky Reach is a really great example of a facility that kind of grew over time. The main building, C-17, that you'll see this afternoon, which is the big, long building right there in the middle, that building was built to build the dam. It's actually a pretty cool building. It'll remind you of the Pybus Market. It's a big open steel frame structure. When I first drove onto the campus, I thought, hey, there's a building I hope we get to do something with, because I like the building itself. The more we spent time with it, the more we realized, okay, this is a building that in order to actually send it into its next 50 years of operation needs to be stripped down to the frame and start over again. And if you did that, is that really where you want it? You have a very constricted, narrow area right here between the buildings, which I'll show you on a picture here coming up. There you can look ahead. One of the challenges on this site, similar to Holly Street, but even more constricted, is just the flow of vehicles, the flow of trucks, and the flow of people. It's a very constricted area. The fuel island's in the center. There's a number of buildings that have been placed in that center area over time. I often wonder, it's like when you look at a farm sometime that, hey, who made the decision to put that building there or to turn it just this much and whatever? And these things grow over decades. And so your workforce has inherited the decisions of many in decades past. And also, I'll just note in the foreground there and then the building right up here, these are also contractor modular style trailers. Again, you've gotten well more than your money's worth out of these buildings. They are literally sagging. They move. I think Steve wonders when the wind blows sometimes if he might want to head outside or not. But these buildings have certainly seen their day. But you're getting a lot of use out of them for sure. And there's a lot of people that work out of these modulars. Top right, you can see the constricted area in the center. You've got the Riverside warehouses on the left. And you've got the fuel island in the center. You've got other buildings that are supporting different functions on the site that are all kind of to the center of that narrow area. Most of the buildings on this campus, again, are pre-engineered steel buildings. Again, they're structurally, they're sound. They're not going to fall down. It's everything else. It's the envelope. It's the electrical systems, plumbing systems, mechanical systems that are they're pretty well shot and that you spend a lot of time keeping up with. And from an operational standpoint, the site, the location of these buildings doesn't necessarily promote the best operational flow. Some interior shots. You have a pretty impressive dive team. I'm amazed at the work that those guys do and the fact that you're a PUD with Hydros, that you have your own dive team. They work out of a space that was carved out of a parking garage with an asphalt floor, and they've jerry-rigged pretty much everything. You'll see it when you go there this afternoon, just the way they handle their oxygen bottles, their trucks, and so forth. This is a group of guys that I think you can be very proud of, and they've made do. They've adapted to what the facilities have offered them. You better just ask yourself, is this the best that we can do it for these guys? Here's an indicative shot right here of just all the stuff that comes along with facilities when you're trying to maintain infrastructure. You've got storerooms that are sharing electrical panels. You've got plumbing systems that are, in some cases, defunct or leaking. You're kind of keeping the buildings held together best you can right now because that's really what you have. And in order to make investments to go forward, again, it's that decision. Do we make the investment there, or do we do something else that looks at the broader picture of functionality? This picture right here, usually you like to have your guys have crew room spaces where they can have their morning tailgate sessions. These guys just meet down in the shop because they really don't have a good space for that. And while this shop area looks pretty organized right now, and the guys do a really good job keeping it organized, the spacing of the columns in this building is really too small for the equipment and the fabrication components that they work with in there. So again, they learn how to jockey things around, again, how to make do with the space that they have, whether it's height or depth or width. Ventilation has always been a challenge in here, and you can see the big ventilation hoods that were put in. They turn those on and it pulls all the heat out of the building too, and you know, they're systems that often are fighting each other because they weren't thought of holistically. They were responses or reactions to one thing to try to solve a problem, and now you've arrived kind of at a point in time where you have all of these systems that aren't necessarily working together. The bottom right, I've got a number of good shots of this space, but the crew room space is interesting. You know, you've got the guys on the right side right where the main walk aisle is, or all the urinals. I decided not to show that picture today, but those guys, this is really home for them. I mean, if you ask them, they'll say, hey, I like being in this space because we feel homey in here. Your mechanics and wiremen actually keep seasonal clothes here because they kind of now they've pulled down their boxes from the top shelf, kind of like you do at home, and they've got all their warm wear, and they'll put their summer wear, you know, up above. They kind of live here. I haven't seen too many crew spaces like this, even in other PUDs or public works, where the guys almost live here. So when you consider that, it's really like home for them. That space is something pretty important, and any future decisions on facilities needs to really take into account kind of culture around how these guys work. And I should say the women, too, and there are women in the workforce. And just to wrap up, your good friends and neighbors over at Wanapum recently completed some new facilities. Some of you may have been down there to see them. I don't have pictures of the new visitor center. They do have a new office building area and a new visitor center space. These images are focused more on the operations. Top left here and the picture in the middle, pretty important building. This is their blast and paint booth building. Very tall, very rugged building. You can see the cranes in here, all the different kinds of things that they lift to blast and paint. You've got head gates and spill gates that the guys down at Rock Island, I don't know if you saw some of the gates that might be sitting out up on the top of the hill, but they pretty much work with those either in the small shop down by the dam itself, which is a little bit constricted, or just right out in the open. They'll weld out there, to, you know, even on a day like today or in the middle of the summer. Wanapum went ahead and invested in what's a pretty nice building. They made a lot of good decisions, and even after talking to them, they would have done a lot of things differently than they even did here, which just pointed out in every operation, you just have to continue to massage and pull it apart and understand how every piece really wants to work so you can create the best operational workflow. They, on the bottom left picture, actually did repurpose their version of C-17. That building happens to be a little bit wider, a little bit better configured than your own C-17. But they managed to repurpose that building, so it shows that you can do that. It was in a good place on their campus to allow for good flow of materials and equipment through the building. You can see how much lighter it is, and you know that building's going to last them for a good long time. And on the bottom right is their new warehouse facility. They invested in a pretty big building that allows them a lot of future expansion flexibility over time, because they're also in the process of rehabs as well there. So that's my 15 minutes, I think.
Perfect.
Roughly.
Quick questions.
Kind of a fire hose there.
Okay, with not no questions, we'll move right on to John. Thank you, Randy.
Yep.
Well, good morning. John Stoll, Managing Director of Customer Utilities. It was helpful to see Randy's presentation because mine actually kind of complements it when you kind of compare what he's presented. I've actually taken a little bit of a different tact where part of my job, I've had the opportunity to go out and visit some other utilities. So that will be the main intent of kind of going through and what we learned. I went out with Tim Pettit this year, and we went to several different utilities. Before I start into that, I've got a quick video that really speaks to some of the parking challenges that Randy had mentioned. So I'm going to go ahead and play that. So this is, of course, the loading dock area that you'll see in a little bit. It just speaks to where our line trucks, our foreman trucks, our service buckets, digger derricks, this is where they all reside for the most part. What just went by was a fuel truck at the end of the day. That fuel truck goes out and fills all the vehicles. Warehouse has vehicles that come in and out of here as well. This is also the area when we have work to be done on big rigs. They stage them for the fleet area. You'll see in that center area. So it gets quite congested. And this typically, this is at the end of shift when the crews are coming back in. It's a little bit of a Rubik's Cube. Over the years, the line trucks, because of what they carry, backhauls that they pull, they've gotten a bit larger. You'll see a lot of tandem axles. So you see where the parking's a bit constrained, even prior to that new size of the rigs. And yeah, that was just a quick view of what that parking lot looks like. In the summer, when we have a lot of fish and wildlife activity, it can get quite congested, even just driving through this breezeway out here as those rigs are pulling out. The next shot, you won't see it. You'll see the bowl room. This is where our line group pretty much meets in the morning. This is what it looks like. They get together, Tim, and we'll give a little bit of a briefing. Sometimes they do look-aheads. If we have a storm, this is generally where everyone congregates and they talk about the game plan for the day. So it's a bit crowded, but as Randy has mentioned, you know, this is home for them. This is where they start their day and this is where they end their day. Okay, so back to what I wanted to quickly go through, and this is very visual, so there's lots of pictures, and I'll move through it pretty quick. But last year, I had the opportunity to visit three what I would call regional service centers. Now, granted, these are utilities, primarily electric. One of them had fiber and other operations, but they're generally, it's their service center where their line crews, their customer service folks, their administrative folks all reside out of one campus. Went to three different utilities. We went down to Yakima to PacifiCorp. We went to Mason PUD number 3 near Shelton, and Inland Power Light, which is just outside of Spokane. What our intent was, we wanted to learn from them. They've gone through similar situations. We wanted to understand what best practices might be, as well as some lessons learned, and have a takeaway. So I put this together with the help of Tim. He went with me, and I presented to the senior management team just as part of one of my learnings for this year. It was very, very eye-opening. I think I've heard the analogy before that, you know, you walk by a fence for 20 years and you don't really realize how bad it might need painting. Well, this was really eye-opening for me because it was an opportunity to learn from these other utilities and see the level of facility that they operate with. I'm going to start with PacifiCorp. This was a building that was built in the 90s. PacifiCorp really has changed their footprint. A lot of their customer service functions are now based out of Portland, but they still have a bit of a service center. So it was really, it really didn't give me that that holistic view, but it did have some key takeaways. But certainly from a customer-focused perspective, it didn't really fit the bill. One thing they did do is they had a really good best practice in vehicle and material equipment storage. You can see that it's, they keep all their fleet inside, and being a central Washington area, you know, that's pretty important. So the ability to pull in all your rigs, your backhoes, your line trucks, your materials, and keep them dry and ready to go for the next day, that was a pretty important feature. I know Tim was pretty impressed with that. So I'm going to spend primarily the rest of my time on the other two. Inland Power, this was one just over the years I've had an opportunity to go and visit on other business. And when this opportunity came up, I wanted to just talk to somebody there who was very knowledgeable of the facility and ask them what they went through. This is a 14-acre site. It was built in 2009 for a really low price, in my opinion, of $11.5 million. It consists of an administrative and a customer service building, a warehouse, and a fleet building. The customer service administrative piece was about 25,000 square feet. It was designed to hold about 110 employees. ALCS was the architect, and Leon Keeble was the contractor. This was interesting. They actually bid it with furnishings. And through that bid, they received all desks, chairs, equipment like that, that they actually sourced from a surplus market. But that had a very nice front entrance. That's the front door to that utility. They had a multi-purpose room. I'd been there earlier for some learnings on other programs that they had in place, and it was very functional. They had a break room here. It was interesting, their break rooms, they generally have quite a bit of kitchen equipment. They use that for storm response, so when employees are working long hours, they may prepare meals to help take out in the field. They had a employee stretching room. This was important, again, with mainly craft folks who, before they would start their shift, would go in and maybe limber up if they were going through any sort of physical therapy. It gave them an opportunity to get prepared for the day. Just a shot down the hallway, they had a nice open concept, lots of natural lighting that they utilized. A look in their customer service area. You can see it was pretty much cube-based. The cornered off is the supervisor's office. Their fleet building as well, they had lots of opportunities to bring equipment inside. They had a wash bay where they could actually environmentally control, clean their equipment. That area, it's a little bit colder than here, being up around 2,000 feet elevation. But the ability to keep their line trucks and a lot of their equipment inside was definitely something they appreciated. One thing you'll notice, that line truck there on the upper right-hand corner, it's backed in. One of the concerns or criticisms, one of the managers had stated, they wish they had more room behind it because it really made it tough to outfit the truck when they needed to load it up for the day. So some key takeaways, and You know, from the management, they thought that surplus secondhand furnishings were a little bit substandard. Not everything worked or was to their standard that they would have expected. They did utilize a very consistent workspace of 10 feet by 12 feet. They thought that the building design and layout did create some noise issues. Again, a lot of these things they were able to work around. Their advice was the details, pay attention to the details, as I mentioned, like some your storage configurations, your cabinets, where they're placed, how functional are they for the work group that's in place. They did have some office and work cube spatial challenges. And the siting of work groups created rework, and I think that's something that we've learned from that, you know, having a close nexus of customer service and customer service engineering is helpful, just like with your line operations group and some of the engineering functions that they went through and they reconfigured to place those groups closer together. What was interesting with that natural light, they did have an issue at certain times of the year, the sun would shine in and almost blind certain work groups, so they had to do some things to mitigate the sunshine coming into the building. It was a LEED designation, so the grounds, again, just looking back, they thought the grounds could have been a little more attractive, but it was a LEED Xeriscape designation. Over the years, they have taken opportunities to slightly improve certain functions that they wanted to. But, you know, overall, for what they got for $11.5 million, I personally thought it was a very attractive campus for that.
But they've already remodeled.
Yeah, just, well, it's, you know, little things. Yeah. I wouldn't say it was a remodel, but just some things of reconfiguring some of the space. The next one I wanted to touch on was Mason County 3, and Randy has done a good job letting us know about this utility. I've worked with them in the past. They're over around the Shelton area, so it was a bit of a drive to go to, but just hearing about this campus, really wanted to go check it out. This one was a LEED Gold campus. They have a goal of being a future net zero energy, so they would produce the energy to run the facility. It houses their warehouse, their field operations, vehicle maintenance, their administrative functions, customer service. They had a collaborative process to manage the stormwater that was on site. So they harvest 20,000 gallons and they use that to irrigate their campus. Although, again, they are in Shelton, so they get quite a bit of rain. And they took advantage of native plants as well. It's a bit larger than Inland. It's a 50-acre site. This was built in 2010, 2011 for about $35 million. It's 43,000 square feet. It's two-story. It's a two-story building where they have the administrative offices as well as customer service. And again, they have the outbuildings. I have a visual of that later. This one, they had a really strong pride in ownership. You know, we met with several employees who walked us through. Just, you know, they were very proud of the facility. They really saw it as the community front door. It's a wood products industry in that area, so they really tried to tie in a wood products theme. They took advantage of supporting a local water system. And when they built this campus, being 50 acres, it was, again, a pretty significant project for that area. Unlike the other two, they had more of an open vehicle storage, but we'll have some pictures that describe it. It's quite large as well. That's the campus. You'll see up front is the administrative building, and in the back is the material equipment storage and some of the craft rooms. This is their front door. Initially driving in, they had plenty of employee and public parking. Again, I thought it was a very attractive building. Just another view of that. This is their customer lobby when you walk in, again, seeing some of the wood products, and it just had, you know, it had a nice, warm, inviting appeal to it. It was two stories, so there were more offices upstairs, and that's just kind of looking back down to that front door of the utility. They had a combination boardroom and auditorium space. It was multi-purpose. They could reconfigure it for lots of functions. Again, quite large, but it's from what they had mentioned, it served them very well. That's just another look back to give you a bit of the space size. This was their upstairs, their engineering workspace. They too had a multi-use kitchen for employees and storm response. The ballroom, this is where their linemen and craft folks would meet. And you can see they have a little bit more of a workspace where they can start their day. What these folks do, especially over there, well, even here with the weather the linemen are exposed to, having the ability to have a place to dry out your boots and things of that nature at the end of the day, they had a very nice locker room for those folks. They had a patio on the backside of that building that led out, again, more towards the fleet and the warehouse area. This is their meter and transformer shop. In plenty of room, plenty of storage. You'll see when you go to Holly Street, we're much tighter than that. But again, this was a new facility that they could design that space for. This again was upstairs where they had an employee break area right next to where the workspace was. Again, very open concept with lots of natural lighting as well. Just a few shots of some more customer-facing workspaces. You could walk in. It was kind of a one-stop shopping, whether you wanted to go to conservation or customer accounts or customer engineering. You may recall from the video we did a couple years ago when we talked about our customer experience. And, you know, we make it work, but we kind of route our customers around to different areas to do different things. Where in a facility like this, it's a one-stop shop. This is their storage. It's still very nice. It's open, but they have the ability to pull through. Not a lot of backing up. It's a lot of a fairly large campus and grounds to maneuver the trucks around. Just a more close-in view. And again, you can see where they can pull out, and over on the left on the bottom is some of their transformers, and then they keep all their wire undercover in another facility. So the conclusions after visiting these three sites, it was very valuable to me to gain a better perspective and to ask questions and understand some of the challenges and opportunities these utilities had. One thing that was clear, I think these utilities took advantage of the downturn that happened back in 2008. The bidding climate was very favorable, and I think they saw that in some of their bid responses. They really took advantage to put their functions where they were closely related to take advantage of that, such as customer service engineering, customer service. The indoor vehicle and equipment storage is very, very valuable. It improves the life of the equipment as well as, I believe, the pride and ownership that the employees shown. Having the ability, again, from a equipment standpoint, vehicles to drive through and avoid backing up has a safety component and an efficiency component. Mason 3, they really felt like the community got behind their project. That was the front door to the community. There was a lot of pride by the community in that facility. Think about the details, the storage, when you reconfigure these buildings. Even things of like central copier work. Work locations, conference rooms, equipment rooms. And again, as the aging workforce marches on, the ability to have, for those who are in safety-sensitive positions, the ability to stretch out, warm up, get ready for their day was certainly a value. And again, one of the things that really kind of opened my eyes that, you know, when you see our facilities, we make it work, we do the best we can. But when you look at what is a reasonable standard of care, it just, my conclusion was we're just not there when looking at these other facilities. And that's it.
Questions for John? Or comments?
Yeah, I guess I did have, I'm looking at this big picture of the 50-acre site on Mason. And I'm looking for poles. This must not be their entire site. Oh, okay. Yeah.
So it'd be kind of this area.
Okay.
I believe this is their fueling area over here. So they really, what was impressive, they had a lot of room to maneuver.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, just a drive through wash bay. Again, lots of room.
And how big a utility is Mason customer-wise?
You know, they're very comparable to us. I think they're around 40,000 customers. They're strictly electric, but they do have a fiber operation as well.
somewhat.
Yeah. Tim, anything that you wanted to mention that I didn't maybe?
I might just add. And we'll
Tim, would you come up here to the microphone, please?
I might just add, although we'll be walking through the facility where you've seen the trucks and stuff maneuvering out there, there was two crews that weren't even there that day. And that's one of the things we're doing when you look at the bull room. It's not necessarily out of better service to the public, but out of need. For about 8 months out of the year, we run our crews on 10-hour days simply for the fact that on Mondays and Fridays, we're not sitting on top of each other in the bull room, and we're also not congesting that parking area so bad. So although we may better serve our customers if we ran differently, it's very difficult to operate that way. So we stagger our crews and our time schedules actually to better perform in the facilities that we have.
You're operating 4-10s with probably half your crews of Monday through Thursday and the other half Tuesday, Friday?
That is correct.
Okay, interesting. Yep.
And that gives us the Mondays and Fridays where they're it's not so congested. So
interesting.
But we'll
good,
be
good creative that. Thinking on your part.
Any other questions or comments? Or for Randy or Dan and Sam, now's an opportunity. Anything you learned this morning that you want to comment on or questions that you walked away from? We did agree, by the way, get the two of you down there in the spring for a complete tour at Rock Island.
Good.
I'm sorry, you can say something?
I was just going to say, we had a great conversation in the vehicle as we were driving, and one of the things that I was scratching my head over was, with limited space on the Douglas County side, it appears that one of the most effective options might be to go up instead of spread out further, which may not even be possible other than to reclaim the village space, and then we've got the highway traffic again. But clearly, the crews have done a great job with what limited space that they're provided to accomplish amazing feats. So very impressed.
Sam, anything to add?
We're not going to go through the headquarters building. I do have a couple of handouts for some recent projects that we've done at the headquarters. We have a large population of the workforce here. I think over 300 of the people work in the headquarters area. And so when we do upgrades or remodels, that sort of thing, we tend to try to do them at nights and weekends. Those sorts of construction projects inside a building where you have an existing workforce become fairly challenging. And I've just got a couple handouts that expose some of those challenges that we've had recently. Some of the very modest things that we've done is two bathroom remodels, one on the second floor and the first floor. And I just have a write-up for that. Also, we have a little bit of a write-up of kind of the history of the tech shop that we're going to walk through that this afternoon, but kind of describes the set of steps that you go through as you make a decision. Each decision is the right decision, but when you look back and you say, boy, had we known that it was going to lead there, would we make that first decision to do that project? And so it just kind of explains that. So I'll distribute this handout as well.
So if you looked at your itinerary, the next part of the tour today is Fish and Wildlife, Tech Shop, Service Building, and Fleet before we go to Holly Street. So why don't we plan to meet at 1 o'clock near the crosswalk between the service building and the headquarters, and we'll walk from there.
Okay, good.
And one last thing too, who is going to be driving their own rigs? I think Steve, Randy, and all three of you are going to drive your own rigs when we go to Holly Street and CM. Mm-hmm. Okay, we'll try to keep together in a common pool so you know where to be.
Any advice on parking, especially at Holly Street? Will somebody raise their hand when they're out there? And
yes, we will.
Jeff, will we be having a company vehicle coming back?
Yes.
I can ride with someone else. That'll cut down on at least one vehicle having to find a parking spot.
Sure. You can come with me.
Great. I'll do that.
All right.
Okay.
Want to adjourn?
Huh?
adjourn?
We'll now recess and we'll reconvene in 5 minutes out on the back step.
Okay.